Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from ESPN.com. Dave, we last spoke on Friday morning, and it feels like it was a world ago. There have been roster moves. There's been a game. There's been a ton of updates on the injury report. I guess if we want to go sequentially, and I was in Montana, so I'm going to let you kind of drive some of the ship here. I was out in the wilderness like you, but I didn't have quite the internet access. But I think I was still in touch on Friday, and I guess I should be strutting around like a peacock like you do, because I finally got one right.
Yeah, we got the surprising news that Casey Hampton and Rashard Mendenhall had been activated on Friday from the PUP. The Casey Hampton news, not so surprising, maybe a week earlier or so than maybe what most people thought. But the Rashard Mendenhall news, yes, because Kevin Colbert has said all along, and Kevin Colbert usually is a man that when he says something, you can pretty much take it to the bank.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Kevin Colbert is virtually, in our experience, he is never trying to snow the media or the fan base. What he's telling you is really what he thinks at the time. And look, anybody who's doing their job well, when facts change, you better be able to change your opinion with the facts. And that's clearly what happened here.
Yeah, and at first I looked in the mirror and my tinfoil hat was on. So, you know, I had to work through that process. I had to take a few Xanax and work through it, you know, that way. And after, you know, immediately after that, Kevin Colbert was on 93.7 The Fan discussing it. And then later Ed Bouchette had a few quotes on him. And when you go back and look through the quotes and you go back and you look at the, you know, let's take Adrian Peterson, for example, you know, yes, I can see that Colbert basically said, look, this guy's development, you know, rehab just came along quicker than what we thought. His exact quotes were something to the effect of the trainer said, look, they've taken him as far as he can do now. And I think the key quote that Colbert used was he's ready for the football part of the rehabilitation.
Right.
Now, should we expect Rashard to suit up this coming week against the Buffalo Bills? No. Should we expect Rashard to suit up for the final preseason game against the Carolina Panthers? Likely not. I mean, he's ready for the football aspect, and that would allow him on the field learning the playbook, which is important. B, allow him to get some carries in practice, which they're able to have now.
This is the key point. We saw it with Adrian Peterson, almost an exact replica of what the Vikings did. The Steelers followed suit. Adrian Peterson was moving along, and they said, you know, he can continue to run on the sideline, but I don't know that that does him any good. If he's going to be back before week six, there's not really much of a difference here. You might as well activate him now so that he can go through the reps in practice. Now, maybe you do, you know, three reps with your other three backs that are contact, and Adrian Peterson puts the red jersey on, and everybody in the defense knows Adrian's getting the next carry. And so there's, you know, there's like, you know, Adrian Peterson's been begging for contact, by the way, but there's light contact or touch, whatever, however you want to go about it. This is what's important to distinguish from Mendenhall. They wanted him to be able to start running the offense and saw no danger in him going through this without taking licks, which is essentially what's going to happen for some period of time.
Yeah, and here's another key point. Kevin Colbert would not have made this move if he didn't think he could have Mendenhall back in the lineup in some capacity prior to the Week 7 game, because the PUP would have meant that he had to miss the first 6 weeks, okay? So he would not be eligible to come off until Week 7 at the earliest. Now, what's a logical speculation of a return here? Is it after the Week 4 bye?
Yeah, I think the answer is, you know, I think you put it just right. He's probably not going to get any preseason carries. So I think you'd probably try to ramp him up after the first 2 weeks, during the first 2 weeks of the regular season, see where he is. Now, it doesn't mean he can't be back earlier, but I think that, Dave, is exactly the right point. The Steelers will have played three games. And this is the other thing is, you know, that six-week PUP, he gets to, you know, that's a game situation. He's going to get another week of practice there, going live with the guys. And I would think that's the time when you'll see him step in. And I would think he'll get worked back into the rotation, may start down as the third down back. The very possibility of doing that. He'll flip and rolls with what he and Redmond did last year, where Redmond's getting 18 carries and Rashard's getting, you know, 7 to 10. But, yeah, I think you're on target with that.
And to be honest with you, I would be surprised even, you know, once healthy, if he can assume that third back down back role, and that means planting, picking up blitzes, and cutting out in open areas, then that's fine. The only way Kevin Colbert gets questioned on this whatsoever is if Mendenhall does not suit up until week 7. That's the only way he's going to get questioned on this. Even if Rashard comes back week 6 or week 5, then you can understand why the move was made. And I reiterate, obviously, he would not have, with all the injuries and spots needed on the 53-man roster due to the linebacker injuries and all like that, it's going to be tough enough trimming this thing down to 53 as it is. He was not going to risk the all-important roster spot if he did not think Mendenhall could contribute in some form or fashion prior to the week 7 game. So I think when you boil it all the way down, I've removed my tinfoil hat, put that aside. Yes, I can understand the move and thank God for modern medicine. And I think we can use, I think the Vikings came out today and said that Adrian Peterson will not play in any of the preseason games. And his injury, I believe, happened a week or two before Mendenhall's. So, you know, we can use Adrian Peterson as sort of a gauge here, kind of moving forward of what's going to happen with Mendenhall here. But nonetheless, yeah, it's good that Casey looks like he's going to be ready now for week 1, although I don't think he's going to start. He might not even be active. You might, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. But at least earlier than week 7, he's going to be ready. There was never really a doubt in that. And now Mendenhall, if you get him back prior to the bye week, great. If you have to wait until after the bye week and he's back for that next game after that, super. And I understand and I applaud the move at that point.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate you patting me on the back for getting that one right.
Absolutely. I thought all along, and it's on tape, I thought all along we were looking at week 10 or so because of the things compared to other knee injuries due to the roster spots, due to the depth at the running back position, which admittedly has had been nicked up and all, but I don't think that predicated the move whatsoever.
No, good point. These guys are making the moves based on the player's health, not on the roster, what's going on with the rest of the roster.
And look at the motivation involved with Mendenhall here. This is a kid that's in a contract year, had every motivation in the world to get back as soon as possible. How much prodding he did to Kevin Colbert saying, look, I am ready. I am ready for this. I don't think and Colbert mentioned that Mendenhall, you know, says he's ready. So really,
it was a trainer's call, though.
Yeah, it boils down to either he's ready or he's not. But, right. Yeah, good call on that, and we'll see if he gets his 100 carries or so, which is no reason to think he wouldn't now at this point, assuming everything goes forward the way it should. But, you know, contract year, and the kid's got everything to play for at this point. And if he goes backwards, well, you know, they weren't gonna sign him to an extension prior to the start of the season. At least that's been my viewpoint on it.
Sure.
Yeah, if you lose him, you lose him.
Dave, let's continue with this theme before we get into the recap of the game. And maybe I want to take a little bit of issue with something you said about the roster spots. I think the Steelers have been incredibly lucky here in training camp with the way things have gone. Of course, they lost David Johnson, and of course, they made the decision today. When they lost John Clay and they waived him injured, they have now reached a settlement. So David Johnson's going to go on the injured reserve for the year and be a free agent at the end of the year. John Clay is not. John Clay has been paid probably pretty close to the full amount of his salary or whatever that amount is. They made an injury settlement. He is now free to sign with any other team. Basically, he won't be signed by any other team in the short term. Maybe halfway through the season, he can get on somebody's practice squad or something happens for him. But John Clay is no longer associated with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But with the news with James Harrison today that he expects to go against Denver, you know, it's not perfect, right? But with all the guys off the pup list now, except Jason Worlds, now how much would you have bet that he would be the last guy, right? We would have said he was the first guy. He and David Cromartie-Smith were the first two guys coming off, and now all the guys have come off but him, and not sustaining any other serious injuries, knock on wood, nothing happens in Saturday in Buffalo, but pretty good here. And I think it's a – I don't know that it's – I think the issue now for roster spots is competition. I think it's a really good situation right now for the Steelers.
I'm going to disagree with you on that. I think there is still some concern. I applaud James Harrison for his thoughts that he'll be back at week one. But, look, this guy is not going to play in the preseason, I wouldn't think. He's going to be playing in that thin air up in Denver. Regardless if he suits up in Denver or not, he is not going to play all 60 snaps on defense. I'm gonna go ahead and throw that out there right now.
Sure.
Jason Worlds, what a mystery. I wrote a post on this saying the mystery surrounding Jason Worlds. I think there's still a good shot. I threw out a week or so ago, it might have been on one of the evening podcasts, that there's still a good shot this guy starts the season on the PUP list. We don't know much about that wrist injury and what the time frame is associated with it. Keith Butler seems to think and told you that this is a kid that needs reps too before he gets back on the field. James Harrison today admittedly said that he needs to get reps before he gets okayed. And then now you throw in the injury, the MCL sprain or tear or whatever it is with Stevenson Sylvester that evidently happened Saturday. And he's going to miss, possibly the first few weeks of the season. And he did not start the season on the PUP list or training camp on the PUP list. So either you're going to cut him, which is likely not going to happen, or you've got to carry him as an inactive for week one. You now have the situation, if Jason Worlds is activated from the PUP before the start of the season, you very well could have three linebackers on the inactive list at week one at Denver. And, when you look at Mendenhall being added back on, what does that do to the running back numbers now, David? Is Baron Batch a guy that is he the odd man out? And we'll get into his play here in a little bit of the game against the Colts and thus far through the preseason. I think he offers you too much in a special teams fashion in a third down back roll situation that I think that you carry now the five backs on the roster, which squeezes another roster spot away from you. So my concern at the outside linebacker depth remains. And this has been the hardest 53-man roster bottom end to carve out right now. We'll go over some scenarios in a little bit.
Yeah, no question there are issues here. I guess the way I'm looking at it is we knew about all these injuries coming into camp, and it looks like all of them except Worlds have moved along. Well, actually, I guess we should say Worlds and Harrison. Worlds and Harrison have been slower to come forward than the others, and the other guys probably have come forward faster than we thought. So a bit of a trade-off, and it's unfortunate, as you point out, at that one position, there's definitely an issue because you've got those two guys there, and then Sylvester on top of it being another linebacker. Yes, what you said, I agree with everything you said.
And remember, Sylvester had been getting work outside too,
Sure.
So
sure.
That a guy like Adrian Robinson, boy, does this kid now have an even better fighter's chance at the 53 now? We'll have to see how the rest of the preseason plays out. I mean, we both agree and have said for some time that Adrian Robinson is a lock to make the practice squad. But with his play thus far in preseason, is it a lock that he makes the practice squad? So because of what he can give you with a linebacker playing special teams and what he at least has shown, as raw as he is to be able to get after the passer, God forbid you get to that point, you have to now maybe consider carrying him on the roster as well too, which – we're going from the Steelers normally like to carry around eight or nine linebackers on the 53-man roster, depending on what happens with Worlds here to start the season. Do they have to carry 10?
Well, yeah, it's not the end of the world. And I have to go through the tape again because, as I said, I've only seen parts of the game. But, yes, Robert Golden, we've talked about the three kind of free agent guys, and whether it's Gilraith and Tyler Beiler at wide receiver, whether it's Golden and Adrian Robertson on the defensive side of the ball, there are some guys who are free agents who are going to make a legitimate attempt. They get a legitimate shot at claiming a roster spot here. Let
me throw this scenario by you real quick. Carrying 8 offensive linemen instead of 9 to start the season, being as how Trey Essex and Kelvin Beachum have shown absolutely nothing through 2 preseason games. The Steelers normally keep dress 7 offensive linemen on game day. I thought Gilbert and Foster played well enough outside of their normal positions this week to provide enough flexibility that for at least the first few weeks of the season, I think you could get away with carving out a roster spot by only carrying 8 offensive linemen initially. You'll have Trey Essex on speed dial, and if Kelvin Beachum shows you anything over the remaining two games and is worth keeping, you sign him to the practice squad. So that's something to think about. David Gilreath, he definitely stepped up above the crowd this week, but I've thrown out the scenario, do you go into, because what Chris Rainey and the possibilities of keeping 5 running backs on the roster, do you go into week 1 with Gilreath on your practice squad, assuming he's the guy that finishes out winning that quote-unquote fifth wide receiver spot, keep him on the practice squad and walking into the first 2 weeks with dressing with only 4 wide receivers on the 53-man roster, with Mike Wallace, of course, being one of those. That's another way you could – I mean, I just carved you out 2 spots on the 53-man roster on the offensive line and the wide receiver position that way.
Absolute possibilities, Dave, and there are a lot of things they can do. And I guess what I would say is I don't think anybody should think the 53-man roster that goes into Denver is going to be the 53-man roster that goes into the week after the bye.
Absolutely. Good call.
I think that, you know, really we want to be thinking about 55, 56 guys here. It's not going to be etched in stone. Some guys will make it to the practice squad. As you said, a guy like Trey Essex might get cut and then get signed back and cut again, depending on need. And I'll just throw it out there. If there are issues, there's certainly a chance that on week 1, Charlie Batch is cut and then re-signed. Then he's not guaranteed for the year. They could play with the quarterback position in week 1. There are a lot of things they could do. We've seen them a lot of times cut guys on Saturday and sign them on Monday. Charlie Batch is a guy who is certainly a candidate for that, since they're going in effectively a roster spot short with Ryan Clark. Now, they're not going to be 45 short, but they're going to be 52 short. Everything you said, I agree with. I think there'll be some maneuvering, but I think people shouldn't maybe be so hard and fast about the 53 this year because of the guys on the PUP list and because of the Ryan Clark situation and because of the injured guys coming back. So, yeah, I think it's less important to etch that in stone and think about, how these guys look in special teams the next 2 weeks, where they see the need. And as you pointed out so perfectly, this linebacker situation, I think you could have 3 guys, as you said, inactive the first week who were in week 4. You know, 2 of them are playing a big key to your defense.
Absolutely. And the quarterback thing is an interesting situation. You worry about a team like the Cardinals maybe going after Batch. But, you know, Batch wants to stay in Pittsburgh. Let's be clear there. And Jared Johnson, who will get into his performance against the Colts a little bit here, you know, just in case you sign, you know, if he shows enough over the last 2 games, you try to get him to the practice squad just in case something happens to Charlie Batch should you cut him. So, yes, you could carve out theoretically an early week 1, week 2 roster spot by carrying 2, because let's face it, one of those, you're not going to dress all 3 quarterbacks week 1 anyway. So one of them has to be inactive. And being as there's...
Well, they can be the 46th guy. They have that rule change last year.
No, and there's no more emergency quarterback rule.
Oh, there is no emergency quarterback.
Right. That means you dress 1 more player. There's 7 inactives now. So
okay, fair enough. Okay, good. Thank you for clarification there. Dave, I think there's 0 chance that anybody in the world signs Charlie Batch. 0. So that's a positive for the Steelers.
Absolutely, and there we go. We've carved out now 3, unfortunately, on the offensive side of the ball, but due to the injuries and due to the uncertainty and due to the Ryan Clark situation, yeah, this is going to make, you know, and think about this too, you know, the extra tight end position that you're probably going to have to carry tight end / fullback now to back up Will Johnson there as well too. So we've created a couple positions there. You're going to have a lopsided split, more than likely, between offensive and defensive players on the 53-man roster, normally that works out to right at 25 and 25. But, you know, as we've pointed out here, you're probably going to be something like 23 to 27, you know, as far as the split offensive, defensive players, as far as 53-man roster. I'm going to have to need a lot of Xanax, come my final 53-man roster prediction, because the first around my house, it sounds like the first round of the NCAA March Mayhem with all these sheets hitting the garbage can.
Yeah, fair enough. Dave, let's just touch on a couple of things we've skirted around here. James Harrison in today, in and out, did his work, left camp by 1 o'clock, left the training center, the Steelers workout facility by 1 o'clock. He thinks he's going to play. We don't know a lot more, but he's visible. He's there. Anything to add to that?
I would be surprised, but we're talking about James Harrison here. Ed Bouchette had a great interview on 93.7 this morning, saying that, you know, a lot of what this is doing to James right now is it's curtailing his real, you know, he's a workout warrior. And in fact, some people say maybe some of these setbacks he's had because of he's worked out so hard on, you know, trying to get that knee back. So I would be surprised right now, even despite what James is saying. And as I said at the top of the show, even if he is suited up, there's no way he plays all 60 whatever snaps on defense in that game.
And then Wallace Watch, all of a sudden, it appears, or there are reports that he's now going to join the team after Saturday's game against Buffalo. Anything further to add on that? Any insights there?
Yeah, people should listen to us.
Perfect. Perfect. That is exactly what we said.
And he's going to sign a long-term deal too, David. I'm still going there. But yeah, I mean, this is played out. Although maybe the time frame of him reporting during camp, you know, I've missed on initially there too. And, but you know, all along I said, this guy's going to report. And, you know, if you believe Ike Taylor seems to be the key factor in this, what he said last week, I think, Jim Wexler reported that Taylor said not this week, but next. And nobody's been in closer contact with Mike Wallace than really, Ike Taylor. He's let him give him a place to live down there. He's driving his car down there. He's training with Tom Shaw down there who came on a recommendation of Taylor there. So yeah, at this point right now, I would be shocked if he is not signed that tender immediately after that Buffalo game, the first day back to work there. And I, you know, you still have couple of weeks left at that point to get a long-term deal done. And I still stand firm in my belief that will get done.
Okay. Well, we'll still disagree. We'll let that play out and see how it goes. But really good news for the Steelers all around here. And let's now get to the injury report out of the game. Anything significant to note?
There was nothing outside of the pregame news about Stevenson Sylvester. Chris Rainey got his belt.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. That's where I was going to go next. Well, how do you feel about how the Steelers handled that and then how Mike Tomlin handled it post facto?
I didn't like it.
I'm with you. Why put him back in the game?
That's my short answer. I think his quotes even said after he woke up, you know, he's quoted as saying after he woke up. And with all this stuff, you know, as much as we criticized the Cleveland Browns last year and their treatment, the way they handled Colt McCoy and all like that, this is a preseason game. You already know what you have in Chris Rainey. To me, his roster spot has never been in doubt here. Why would you – and, of course, we don't know everything here. We're speculating on what we know and what Chris Rainey has said. Why would you even risk putting him back in the game? So, I do question that, and Tomlin's comments about they said he was ready to go back in and we put him back in, you know?
Look, you and I generally are on the side of what the Steelers do most of the time. We're here to critique what they do. I couldn't agree more with you. I don't, for 19 different reasons, I don't understand why you put him back in the fourth quarter of a game when there was a question mark. Just because he sat out for that long a period of time, I don't know that it's all that wise to put him back in. I'm not a guy who buys that you don't put guys in because they're going to get injured. Look, it's part of the game, but 99% of the time, guys don't get injured. Most guys finish most games healthy within the realm of you're actually playing football. So, but I just didn't understand, again, it's a meaningless fourth quarter drive, what you were going to see with, you know, not the kind of – he seems to be a guy who's going to be – at least a key piece. Certainly, I don't think it'd be the focal piece, but a key piece and a unique dimension, most importantly, to this offense. It just didn't make any sense to me.
And he came back earlier than that, David, back to the game. We've got the offensive participation report done, and he did not miss too terribly much of time before he was back in the game.
Well, that's better in my than that. I think that's a little better. I thought he had sat two whole quarters. So if I'm wrong on that, then I stand corrected.
Well, even then, though, we're talking about a meaningless preseason.
Oh yeah, listen, I'm with you. You know,
why even they got to teach him how to speak to the media for one thing, because you know that's one quote you don't want out there. And we're assuming what he meant by when he woke up. That he was knocked out there. So right. Unless he took a quick nap in there while they were running him through his concussion test, you know, it just doesn't add up with what we know. And, you know, it's hard to go pointing fingers and take an issue here to some degree because we don't know. We're not doctors. I only play one on Twitter.
But you said it, bad PR, and the league is cracking down on this.
The sensitivity, yes.
Yeah, it's just okay. All right, so come out reasonably in good shape. What's the latest on Jeremy Kapanos? We've talked about him, you know, generally having a procedure. Do we have an update as to whether he's going to kick it all this week?
Not yet. He was kicking soccer balls or volleyballs or something around, and Ralph, one of the Trib Live reporters, actually, I think you were the first to really throw it out there that he had some sort of procedure or something done. And Ralph Pauk, I think from the Trib Live, had this past weekend had wrote that he had some sort of procedure done. So your guess is good in mind. You know, they're back practicing today. We'll see what Tomlin says after practice or what the report says today. But, you know, it's a flip of a coin right now whether or not he kicks this next week.
Yep, and I got to still think. I mean, he's got to punt in that last preseason game to have a chance at the job. I don't see them putting a punter on the practice squad. There are too many guys out there. So what was your view of how Drew Butler performed on Sunday?
You know, kind of average. One that should have been, I think he should have planted inside the 10, bounced into the end zone. Hang time, from what I've seen, he's a rookie punter. And, you know, directional kicking, I haven't really paid too much attention to that yet. I don't think the Steelers really have either, except in practice. But, you know, here's the thing, though. Do you risk taking another injured punter into the season like the Steelers have done with Kapanos the last few years, only to find him wind up on the injured reserve, you know, and costing you cap space there? So I think
that's a good point on the cap space. Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, it's probably only, you know, $500,000, but every little bit here is going to make a difference. The question is, the good thing is neither of these guys is going to get picked up if they get released. So the other one is going to be available. So that, at least if there's a silver lining, that's it.
And plus 31 other punters around the league possibly available as well, too. I don't know how many of them have two right now at this point, but
most of them.
There's going to be somebody to call. So right now I'm hedging towards, keeping Butler, see what happens. And then, once Jeremy is healthy, if you need to go back that way, fine. And if not, you know, you just play the waiver wire.
All right, Dave. Well, let's get to the game. We're about 30 minutes in here. And I know people have had a lot of time to digest this. Most people obviously have seen the game. They've had a chance to read all the stuff you've written on the website. So we can probably drill it down a little bit rather than go through our normal procedure of taking sequentially through the game. Why don't we look at it positionally and just talk about the let me just finish off the one other injury news, is that Max Starks expected to go with the first team today at left tackle. He went through his acclimation period. He's now good to go. He can have the pads on. And he sounded like, from what I saw on Twitter from Mike Pursuta, is that Max thinks he's a go today and going to run with the first team. And that's obviously news as well.
Excuse me there.
So Dave, I don't know that I'm surprised. I think we were surprised Max got back so fast. But again, if you're back and ready to go, this is what Bradley had to have told the Steelers when they signed him, because otherwise they probably would have waited until camp started. He said, look, this is a guy who, with another 2 to 3 weeks, 4 weeks of working out, He's a guy who's going to be in, going to be football ready, and it appears that's exactly where we are.
Yeah, and he's jumped up the depth chart just standing and holding that clipboard. So, based on and as we as we're going to get into it, excuse me, as we're going to get into it here, you know, they played it was a perfect week against the Colts to work Marcus Gilbert at left tackle, to work Ramon Foster at right tackle, to give them some snaps for some position flexibility, because as I said, there's a chance that they only carry 8 offensive linemen on the 53. So I think it is good news with Max. Excuse me, Dave. I gotta get this frog out of my throat. I think there's a good shot that Max does start this week against Buffalo. And to me, right now, he's the starter in Denver until I see otherwise.
All right. Well, I think that's kind of where we've been now for a while, because Trey Essex just defaulted on his opportunity. Mike Adams hurt his knee, missed 6 practices. That set him back. Good to see that he was available to play some on Sunday. But let's start with the quarterbacks, Dave. Ben threw the interception, threw the touchdown. Ben's Ben. I don't think there's anything to worry about, anything to mention on that. Basically, what we saw is the Steelers then flipped their second-team quarterback, and it was Batch as opposed to Leftwich in week one. No surprise there. And then Jared Johnson basically second, later in the game. What general thoughts?
Outside of the Ben interception, which I'm not sure what he saw there. I don't know if Will Johnson out of the backfield there rounded his route off too quick, or Ben just didn't see the safety there. Outside of that, I thought Charlie played well. I mean, I thought Charlie was good at adjustments at the line of scrimmage on a few of those there. One of those, even though it fell incomplete, I think it was on on the play where there was the blitz, the safety blitz. You could hear him at the line of scrimmage say, lefty, 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 meaning the blitz was coming from the left side. That alerted Baron Batch to slide over there and pick up the one man, which he did. Marquise Pouncey failed to pick up the slide off and pick up the safety. But it's little stuff like that in the game and the game management type stuff that I think makes Charlie good. And we saw the long ball to Gilreath there on the busted play there because of the defense being offsides. I thought he played well. And let me tell you, Jared Johnson looked a lot more comfortable in his skin this week. Some real nice throws there, to Gilreath, to Justin Peel, newly signed tight end. Like the bootleg calls there at the end. I thought overall he looked comfortable in there. Now, how is he game management, reading defense stuff and all like that? We don't really know yet. This is preseason, and those last two drives were 3 wide receivers in the game and 1 running back, and pretty much just a wide open offense out of the shotgun there, though. But overall, I came in, much better performance, I thought, than the first week there. He looked comfortable in his skin, and I have no worries with the Steelers at quarterback. Whichever direction they go with the number 3 spot, I'm not concerned right now. I thought they played well.
That's my point as well. I'm not concerned about it. All things being equal, I'd go youth rather than – and because I think Charlie Batch is not – I'm just 100% sure nobody's going to sign him. I think if the Steelers need to manage the roster, they're better off going Jared Johnson to the practice squad and Batch unsigned here, at least in the first early weeks of the season. But, again, I'll trust their judgment on that. Let's go to the offensive line. What I like to call your area of expertise, but really everything's your area of expertise, so maybe that's whatever. I love your offensive line work. It's one of my favorite things. So what did you take out of the game?
I thought Gilbert and Foster represented themselves well at left tackle and right tackle respectively. And I think that, keep getting back to this needing to carry 8 on the 53-man roster possibly. I think now Ramon Foster is a guy that can adequately play both guard spots and both tackle, right tackle spot if need be. I thought all starting 5 played well. Willie Colon, boy, what he had some good early, couple early possession blocks in there that freed Jonathan Dwyer. Gilbert had some nice blocks. Pouncey, of course, wasn't in the game too terribly long as Ben was. I think it was about 19 snaps. Thought he played well. I thought David DeCastro really, really looks comfortable in there. Thought he played a good game. When you get outside the starting 5, Mike Adams came in, replaced Gilbert, and played quite a bit at left tackle. Still struggling. He still looks good at run blocking areas. Still struggles with his hand work. allowing people to get their hands a couple times up underneath his neck there, which means he's rising up too quick there out of his stance and not staying down, and then allowed some pressures to be spun off of him because of that. We're going now to looking at Mike Adams possibly being inactive for the first couple of weeks of the season. There's no doubt he's going to make the roster, but looking at him being inactive, Kelvin Beachum, another poor showing by him. He now has 5 penalties in 2 preseason games now, and he worked again at left tackle, left guard, did not look comfortable at either position there. Ligurski looked fine at center. We'll see how that flushes out when my offensive line report's done. Outside of that, we have Trey Essex got put on roller skates a few times. This is a guy that I think you can get away with cutting for a roster spot and, not worry about somebody signing him, have him wait by the phone there. Who else am I missing inside?
Yeah, I think, Dave, that's the guy. He's been a disappointment as offensive line. We made a little bit of the fact that he looked so svelte in the offseason, really looked fit coming in here. He just hasn't played well. It's just plain and simple. He didn't play that well in camp. Hadn't played well in 2 games.
Yeah, and Ryan Lee is a guy, people do not sleep on this guy. You've heard me talk about him for quite a while now, had him even on the podcast after he was signed. This guy, although he only played in that last series there, he continues to do his job well. On one play, he pulled to the right there through the hole, was on the linebacker, and it allowed for a big run, I believe, by Jason Ford, the newly signed running back there. It's going to be hard to pick out anything negative that he did in that game, and although he's running with the third team still against questionable players that are going to be out of work soon, he is a guy that you seriously have to consider for the practice squad. I think he showed himself good enough for that. The other reserve guys, who am I missing here? Malecki, he's gone. Kyle Jolly never got in the game.
Chris Scott's gone. See ya. Thank
Chris
you.
Scott's gone. Outside of the main ones that we've kind of been focused on, I thought overall, outside of the play of Trey Essex and Mike Adams, I thought it was a good night for the offensive line, and you've got to be excited with Cologne, Pouncey, and DeCastro, what you saw in that game as far as blocking, and I think you also have to be happy with the way Ramon Foster and Gilbert played at their, out of position, so to speak.
Yeah, Dave, we've seen it. We've seen the guys do their things. Antonio Brown did his thing. Jonathan Dwyer has been a guy who's really looks like he's taken a step forward this year. Thoughts on the skilled position guys, anything, but, without going through every guy, just anything on the bigger, on the positive or negative side. Clearly, David Gilray is the guy who also took a step forward on Sunday.
Yeah, and Gilray should not be a guy that's a surprise. If they're listening to the podcast and reading Steelers Depot, your interview with Scotty Montgomery saying, hey, this is a guy we want to look at this week because he had to sit out the previous week with a foot problem. Antonio Brown, what can you say? I mean, the guy's already earning his money, taking that bubble screen, the cuts that he made in that game. Also, I believe had another catch or two in that game.
Yep, yep.
Sanders,
no catches for him.
No catches, kind of alligator-armed one over there, a pass over there to the side. I didn't see him block. Normally he's been known as a good blocker. I didn't see the effort there, but, of course, it is preseason. Gilreath, can't say enough about him. The other guys, let's see, Jericho Kotchery really didn't do much in the game, but, hey, he's your third wide receiver, like it or not.
How about the tight ends and fullbacks?
The tight ends, Will Johnson gets a B minus in that game. Didn't see much out of Jamie McCoy, who got some snaps at the fullback position there. Justin Peel saw, this guy's not going to make the 53-man roster, but he did some nice things in the game. Leonard Pope had a few nice blocks on the edge, although he did whiff on the screen to Antonio Brown that went for a touchdown. He got just enough of a piece, I guess, so he should get credit for that. The running backs, Jonathan Dwyer, continues to have a solid preseason in camp. I like the way the way the Ford kid ran. Even on the broadcast, they said, it's unfair to put the bus label, the Jerome Bettis label on him yet, but I thought he ran good considering the amount of practices that he had. Baron Batch, although his stats do not bear it out through 2 games, this is a guy, hey, we saw it on the Antonio Brown touchdown. downfield making blocks, took out two Colts players near the end zone there that enabled Antonio Brown to go the rest of the way. He had some great blitz pickups in that game as well, too, so don't judge Baron Batch just by his stats. He's a guy that's also been on the special teams unit, and I think he's got enough on tape now that if you're thinking that you're going to try to cut him and get him to the practice squad, I think he's shown enough that another team might be interested in signing him.
I think good assessment all around on all that stuff. Generally agree. It's nice to see AB get in the end zone. It's one thing he hasn't done much in his career as a wide receiver, so good to see that happen early. I agree with, as I said, Jonathan Dwyer's taking that step forward, and it's now just a numbers game in the backfield. How many are you going to keep? It's pretty simple that Baron Batch is a guy who can make this team, but he's not competing with Chris Rainey. Chris Rainey's on the team. Baron Batch is a guy who may make this team, and if he doesn't, they'd certainly love to have him on the practice squad. But, yeah, I think you've set it up just right. Defensive side of the ball, Dave, Steve McClendon's still a beast. Did we see anything from anybody else? Adrian Robinson, a nice job. Bigger picture stuff, any thoughts on the schemes, on what happened in general? Andrew Luck looked reasonably good with, a couple turnovers, of course, but he's going to be everything I think they've made him out to be.
Let's start with Ike Taylor. The interception, pick six, boy, that's a sight for sore eyes. I don't think that's happened since a St. Louis game a few years ago. Any interception by Ike Taylor is a welcome sight. But outside of that, he missed a couple of tackles. That I noticed. So, he needs to clean that up a little bit. The defensive line, Steve McClendon, I thought, had a nice game. I thought Brett Kiesel, boy, the opening snap, he sniffs out the screenplay there to the running back there. He also had a good push on the Ike Taylor interception there. Ziggy, I thought, played above the line while he was in the game. The reserves, Chris Carter on the outside, sort of an up-and-down game. Certainly guys still showing progress there. On the opposite side, Lamar Woodley looks ready to go. As far as starters concerned go, I thought Ryan Clark had a nice game early in the game. The mix-up between Ike Taylor and Troy Polamalu on the interception by Cortez Allen there, that should have been six the other way. There was a blatant mix-up on the crossing, on the rub-off there, so to speak, there that they're going to have to get cleaned up. Pretty vanilla stuff. We saw a little bit more blitzing. Some Fire X stuff, I think, in that game as well, too. The inside linebackers, Foote on that one rushing touchdown was late getting to the hole, I thought. I believe it was the first rushing touchdown there. Ziggy Hood had two blockers occupied that were double-teaming him. Woodley, I believe, was crossed out on the edge there. Foote, in my opinion, should have done a better job getting to the hole. Spence had a good game, sideline to sideline. Still gets caught up in some wash there, but definitely making progress, especially in pass coverage. I thought he knows what areas of the field to be in there. Cortez Allen, great game. I thought Keenan played well while he was in the game. Didn't really see too much out of Curtis Brown. Really get tested over there on the other side. Josh Victorian had the second interception, which pretty much sealed or helped seal the deal there. That was almost his second one in 2 weeks there. So
yeah, that was a good play. That was a good play.
Yeah, nice break on the ball there. Robert Golden still being encouraged of what we're seeing him coming up and hitting from the safety position there. Didn't see too terribly much, I don't think, out of Will Allen or Ryan Monday, but I still think both those guys' roster spots are safe. It all depends on whether or not they want to carry a fifth safety for that opening week. Golden very well could beat out Damon Cromartie Smith there for that position there. Haven't really seen too much out of him. Ryan, who's the Myron Rolls, not going to make this 53-man roster. He's not going to make the practice squad.
Oh, and he never was.
Right. And, it's a great backstory, but it ends there. Brandon Johnson, kind of disappointed with that game with his work inside. Went flying by a couple of tackles. Kind of wondering if this is a guy that might be, might not make it, but I guess it depends on what happens with Stevenson Sylvester here to start the season. You might have to keep him by default with what he gives you on special teams, because Stevenson Sylvester is a big-time special teams player. Adrian Robinson, to kind of sum up here, liked the pass rushing, the pressure on the outside, had a great pass deflection there on one play, I think, early in the game, followed it up with a pressure there. Alameda Ta'amu, getting a lot of questions on him. plays way too high, David. Still playing way too high. Got a lot of work to do. I saw him chase well sideline on a pressure by Adrian Robinson once. But just very inconsistent right now. And as we thought, after the draft, it's going to be a while on him. If Casey Hampton's ready to go by week one, Alameda is going to be inactive and is going to be on that inactive list for some time now. So, you know, that's sort of a broad brush stroke look at it, but that's what I took away from it on both sides of the ball there personnel-wise.
Yeah, good stuff as always, Dave. Yeah, Tamu's going to be a redshirt this year. I'll be surprised if he gets if he's active, you know, anytime in the first 10 weeks of the season. We'll see what happens, and obviously injuries change things.
Let's add to that. Morty Ivey, I thought, had some good snaps on the defensive side of the ball. This time we saw him at left outside linebacker and right outside linebacker, I believe, plus that punt block. That always gets noticed, you know, in the film room when you do stuff like that. So, you know, let's give a quick shout-out to him in the few snaps that he played.
All right, good stuff. It looks like now, you know, not that this is particularly significant because we've talked a lot about how the Steelers are going to have three corners on the field a lot of the time, but it looks like Keenan Lewis, as well as Cortez Allen has played, it looks like Keenan Lewis may hold on to that spot as the starter opposite Ike, and that's fine. He has had a good camp, let's be clear. Both those guys have had very good camps, and Curtis Brown has had an okay camp. He got beaten that Eagles game a couple times, but I think they feel good about the depth there. Good game from Ryan Clark. We'll see what happens with that safety position in the first week. And then, again, when we talk about how the 53-man roster might be different after week one, they may be carrying an extra safety or an extra DB because of the situation with Ryan Clark in that game. Dave, we got a ton of other emails and things from people, but I think we'll save those till Friday, and we'll preview kind of what's going on with Buffalo and hopefully have some more news on some of these injury situations. But generally here, Dave, into camp, going with, 2 weeks left, we had a couple days of bad news last week, but generally here, it looks like generally things are pretty good this far into the camp.
Outside of the outside linebacker depth, which I'm going to worry about all year, I'm happy with how things have progressed so far through training camp. It's good to see a kid like Gilreath finally make a step above there. We got a good idea of what's happening with the offense. We're seeing Rainey and Batch being lined up even outside in the slot on some occasions. Special teams need some work, and I believe Tomlin hit on that after the game as well, too. But you got to remember, Al Everest is shuffling around tons of people right now, trying to get a good look of who can fit there right now. So, I'm outside of the injuries and the outside linebacker depth, I'm still optimistic of, and now that we got news with Mike Wallace possibly being in here next week, my optimism remains high heading into the last two preseason games.
All right, great stuff. Anything to add before we close?
Two things. Did you see the Call Me Maybe video that's floating around?
Well, I mean, I've seen 20 of them. I'm not sure which
The Steelers have a new one out, and it's worth, it's worth checking out their version of it. I've got that up on SteelersDepot.com.
I'll head there shortly.
In addition to that, the final kick by Danny Ratman. Okay, Danny Ratman, let's just get this out there. This guy has surprised the hell out of me. He's made some really, really strong kicks. Great kickoff distance, too. Sean Swisham, though, right there with him, kick for kick as well, though, too. On that final game-winning kick that was tipped and barely went over the crossbar, if you go back and look at that, it looks like that thing might have been headed wide left initially. It's hard to tell by the video, but we might have caught a break there. Only the coaching staff and a better camera view will tell that. But that's going to be another interesting battle the rest of the way. But it's hard to, even though cutting Swisham will save you some money there, it's still kind of hard to go with the rookie kicker at this point, and it's hard to see Ratman getting picked up elsewhere right now. So
yeah, he won't get picked up, and Swisham will get the kicks this week, and he'll get a pressure kick if there is one. But good job for good job for the kid. He's accounted himself well, and we'll see how it plays out, like we will with the rest of these edge roster battles.
Yeah, and we'd like to. Boy, we got a ton of emails in here. I appreciate everybody thanking me for the training camp coverage and all. And we appreciate all the people that were on with us. David even was able to sit on a few of the evening ones with me as well too. We hope you enjoyed that. We did get a few comments saying that we need to help try to clean up this audio a little bit. And I am efforting trying to get better audio quality in these podcasts, but it's good to hear back from you people. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot, follow David at Hammer Speaks, follow the show at Terrible Podcast, follow, let's see, email us theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You know how to get a hold of us there, and please continue to do so. And David, I think you've got some good news to pass along before you take us out.
Yeah, I will. The official announcement is going to be tomorrow, so I'll just leave it to Twitter. But I think I'll be with you all fall on ESPN Radio, and we'll just leave it at that. And I'll post something as soon as it's official. But certainly hope on our next podcast on Friday we have that. And also on the donations, we got a couple whoppers this week. And look, every dollar, it means something to us. We give according to your thoughts and your means and all that. But we got some significant ones this weekend, and I owe some people some emails, as always. So very much appreciated. And always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.